Lurleen was in her makeshift garage, the unused seed shed on the outskirts of the village of Pierneroda. It was where she slept, where she lived for the last few months, and where she had all of her tools hung on rusty nails in the thin wooden walls. It was right around midnight, and Lurleen was right around drunk, when one of the local kids knocked, then poked his head in. "Signora?" "It's Lurleen. For the upteenth time, Luis. It's Lurleen." "Signora, there is a call for you at the cantina. Man says it's very, very urgent."
"Say who it is?"
"He say his name is Ape? Like Mono?"
"Something like that."
Lurleen slipped on her boot and strapped on her foot and wandered after the kid back to the cantina. Swinging Sunny Champagne was on the mic, offering half-off cervezas as he belted out the Kenny Chesney bop, Beer in Mexico. There was a phone in the back office. On the other end was her older cousin. In some ways, her role model. Ape Drape. Tommy. Sheriff Tom Kendo Jr. "Hey, baby cousin. How you doing, Tom? It's been a while. It's been too long. You sound blitzed. You doing all right?"
"I am. Could be better. Could be a damn sight unbetter.
You seeing anyone? Any hot tamales down there?"
"It's complicated."
"Oof. Complicated is never good.
Ape, you calling to catch up, or you got something to say?"
There was a heavy pause. "Laurel, he's back. Earl Joe, the kill car."
"When?"
"About an hour ago."
"And you saw it?"
Ape didn't answer. The silence was all the answer needed.
"Shit fire.
What do I do? I'm not asking you to solve my problem, but I surely could use some advice."
"Well, you're going to have to see the..."
"Fuck it. What you're going to have to do is wait for me. I'll be up there directly, and we'll get it sorted, one way to other." She hung up and went to find Sonny. She needed a car, and she needed it now. Part of her had always suspected that Earl Joe was still an unfinished piece of business. But after a few years, she'd started to let it go. Now, she had to go back and settle it again. This time, once and for all. But damn, if she knew how she was gonna do that.
Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem. Killers, cannibals, and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact. Tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion.
She had to go right to Sunny Champagne. Of course. Besides being the mayor of Pierneroda and the face of the town and a legend in this part of Mexico, he also knew everybody. And everybody loved him. Once Sunny got the word out, Lurleen had a functional Nissan pickup within 2 hours. She spent the next 4 hours tuning it up and changing the filters and fluids, all the while sweating out the last of her drunken stupor. When the sun rose, she was leaving the village of Pierneroda behind her. Monica asked when she would be back, and Lurleen, in full honesty, said that she didn't know. Life's full of surprises. It wasn't an easy goodbye, because nothing about Monica was ever easy. But there were bigger fish to fry at the moment, so it was a quick adios, a kiss on the lips, and a strong but tender hug. Bittersweet. Then the road was disappearing under her front bumper, the tires were humming, and Lurleen was at the wheel. Even in such a wimpy little truck, she was in her element. She drove, leaving the last few months behind and heading directly into her last few years, towards West Virginia and the very literal ghosts of her past. It was slow going, no way around it. She had a map and a CB radio, some cash in her pocket, and a .38 special under the seat, wrapped in a .38 special t-shirt, ironically enough, one from the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys tour. She wound her way north and had nothing to do but think. It was the perfect time to trip down memory lane, seeing what her end destination was. Not that it bothered her to think about Earl Joe. That was a feature on her mind's eye highlight reel, truth told. But it also made her think of home, the holler, the family, the witch, and, most strongly, of Janice. Shotgun Janice, her first love. The benchmark, the world's fucking record. Lurleen had never loved anyone so deeply, and probably never would. Janice's ghost would always be over her shoulder to some degree, trapped in memory like amber. That utterly perfect once-in-a-lifetime matchup that would haunt all of Lurleen's future relationships. Earl Joe killed Janice, ground her up under his hellfire wheels. And that's what really started this whole mess. That he took Janice is what signed Earl Joe's death warrant, or whatever the right phrase is for a man already dead. Lurleen was heading back not just for ape drape, but for Janice. If anyone deserved vengeance and atonement, it'd be her. And it seems that that check hadn't yet been cashed. Her thoughts drifted from Janice to Monica. Smart, funny, sexy as all get out. The real, total package. Almost. Janice had been fearless, bold, living her life her way, walking her own path. Anyone else and their fool opinions be damned. Monica was fearless, up to a point. Either she was nervous about judgment from her people, or she wasn't sure about the relationship. I mean, come on. The woman had been forced to live with a tribe of cannibal mutants for a long time, and sort of fell back into her old life in Lurleen's shotgun seat. It was a whirlwind, and whirlwinds don't last long. Lurleen had strong feelings for Monica, but love was more than just feelings. Love was also trust, it was time, it was behavior and effort. It was embracing it and never letting go, no matter what kind of speed bumps you hit on the highway to happiness. As displeased
as Lurline was about having to contend with the kill car again, at least it was a solid excuse to take a break. Maybe Monica could sort out her personal shit while Lurline sorted out this shit. She drove to the small border crossing maintained by the DRO. As she expected, she was still on the list for any time, exit, or entry. She had friends in high places, after all. She stopped for food and gas in Laredo. Now that she was stateside, it was time to ditch the touchy-feely stuff and get down to strip gears. What the Sam Hill was she going to do? Yeah, she was going to help. Of course she was going to help. She was going to powwow with Ape, tell him everything she knew, soup to nuts. No matter what the stories around Bedford may be, nobody knew everything except her. And Ape, he deserved the full truth at this point. But beyond that, shit. Lurline kicked around various ideas all the way through Texas. By the time she crossed the ankle of Louisiana, she found one that she really, really hated. But she couldn't shake it. It was crazy. It was ludicrous. And yet, thanks to boredom, dog-tiredness, and a lack of anything else, by the time she hit Mississippi, she thought it might be worth a try. She picked up the handle of the CB radio. We're going to do this channel by channel, so if you like the sound of my voice, you can follow along and keep listening. This is Lurline Stokes, champion of the Crooked Neck and the best goddamn driver ever come out of the Mountain State. I am calling out for the Southern gentleman. You got your ears on, old boy? You still hitching rides through these parts? I'm eastbound and down on U.S. Highway 98. I'll keep an eye out. She switched channels and said it all again. Once she was deep into Alabama, she cut north and started the broadcast from the top. She took this route mostly to avoid Georgia. Georgia was always trouble. Every single time. Right before she crossed into Tennessee, Lurline got a call back from a friendly. Miss Lurline, this is Blackadder. Come back. Blackadder, like the show with Mr. Bean on it? That's the one. Now I could never make heads or tails out of their accents. But I can hear you, Blackadder. You sound A-OK. Hey, I like the way they talk. Listen. Why are you calling out to that man? It's common courtesy amongst truckers not to use his name over the radio. No offense intended, Blackadder. Just some personal business needs attending. Well, remind me to never get into your personal business. Try and keep the ruckus to a minimum. And good luck. Blackadder over and out. There were a couple of others telling her to shush. But as usual, Lurline kept on a-running her mouth. The Tennessee law loves their speed traps, so she left the main drag and stuck to the two lanes, the byways, where the cops rarely ventured. Things were quiet for a while. She fiddled with the radio. She was hoping to find some Dolly, but found some scratchy John Denver instead. And that did the trick for 4 minutes. Anyone says they don't like Take Me Home Country Roads, probably ain't worth knowing. And then the radio died, mid-chorus, and the CB lit up bright. Lurline Stokes. You got your ears on? It was him. She reached for the handle. Watch out now. We don't want you to have an accident. She looked up
and saw a single, solitary figure in the middle of the upcoming crossroads. He waved at her. "You mind if I hitch a ride with you?" Lurleen stopped the car. She sat for a moment, collecting her thoughts. Maybe this wasn't the world's best idea. But here she was. The moment was upon her. Might as well stick to the plan. She popped the hood and got out, dragging her old rucksack full of clothes and the little gear she had. She tossed it to the roadside. Then she picked up a gas can from the bed of the pickup and braced it on the bumper, holding it tight by her hip as she raised the hood. The gentleman was walking towards her slowly, in no hurry, and more than a little curious as to what she was doing. His boots scraped against the pavement, grinding gravel, and he pushed his cowboy hat back farther on his head to take the shadow off his eyes. Lurleen dumped gas all over the engine, then lit it on fire. Turning to look at the gentleman, she threw the truck keys as far as she could, then backed up and watched the engine spark, melt, twist, and burn. He stood next to her. They were inches apart. The firelight danced across their faces. He produced a hand-rolled cigarette, put it in his mouth, and leaned into the fire to light it up. "Pretty dramatic," he said to her. "Maybe so. Is this why you called me out?" "No, I wanted to talk with you." "Talk with me? After you stabbing me twice, after you hauling me to that little jail, you want to talk?" She nodded, and then said, "So what now?" "Well, I suppose we walk," he sighed. "You wearing the right foot for walking?" She wasn't, but said that she was. Her other foot was in the ruck, but damned if she would switch them out in front of this guy. They started north, cloaked in inky black. No street lights, and the few stars clustered way down around the Southern Cross. "Kind of rude, don't you think?" she asked him. "Calling out a lady on account of her infirmity. That don't sound very genteel." "Manners only take you so far," he answered. "But you are correct, madam. I apologize for my uncouth behavior. It is not befitting either one of us." "Apology accepted. And for what it's worth, I'm not crowing about stabbing you. I was just scared. Thought it was my only way to survive." He chuckled. "You ain't wrong. There been many others survived taking a ride with you?" He shrugged, noncommittal. "A few, here and again. Got to be someone left behind to tell the tale. Is that what it's all about?" "You couldn't understand what it's all about." Silence descended again, and Lurleen let it marinate. She mulled over what she was about to say and how she should say it. "So then, you remember when you and I last talked," she started.
"I do, very clearly."
"And you remember I told you that Lefty thought you were suicidal, and I thought you were a thrill seeker."
"In it for the kicks, is how you phrased it," he said.
"Well, you never answered me about that. You ain't big on answers, are you?"
"But I want to know, which one is it?"
"It's a little of both, I suppose."
Which was not the answer she was after.
"Well, shitfire, I'm trying to circle this thing. Do it tactfully." "Tactfully ain't working. So let me just jump ahead a few paces, because I had this whole spiel in my head."
"Please do." The gentleman stopped and looked at her.
"I won't tell you, but ask anyway."
"Okay, here goes. What the fuck are you?"
He laughed.
"That's it? That's your question? What am I?"
"Yep, that's my question."
"What if I don't understand the question? You're right here. You see me. You touched me. I'm real. I'm a man. What else?"
"Okay, here's what else. So a lot of people, like Lefty, for example, but a lot more than just her, they think you're a serial nut job with a lucky streak a mile wide. You cause all these accidents because car wrecks are your weapon of choice. That's how you kill. That's how you get off. Yeah? Some serial killers use a knife. They stab. This is how you do it. And this whole act of yours is nothing more than that. Ripped off from this old southern legend about an immortal highwayman who takes rides and kills the drivers. And then there are other people, a lot fewer, mind you, who think you are that southern legend, and that you've been around for a couple, 3 centuries, doing just what you're doing now. And even those folks, they have differing opinions. Are you the god of the paved road, taking tribute in blood and oil? Or are you a prisoner here, trapped, fated to always wander the roads with no escape?
So, what's your question?" he smirked.
"What the fuck are you?"
"Let me ask you this, Lurleen. What does Bill Handel think I am?"
"Don't know, don't care.
You know, I'm the one that gave him that limp."
"Yeah, we got a whole sewing circle of people who faced you and walked away from it. Now answer the damn question."
And just then, headlights engulfed them. A minivan rounded a soft bend and illuminated the pair as they argued. The vehicle slowed, clicked off the high beams, and drifted to a stop. There was a plump woman at the wheel, a plumper man in the passenger seat, and 2 morbidly plump kids sitting in the back.
"Hey there, hey," said the driver.
"What happened?"
"It'll be a tight squeeze, but I think we can take you to the next gas station."
The gentleman tipped his hat.
"Ma'am, I am in your debt."
Lurleen whistled.
"No thanks. I'd go ahead and make tracks, I was you. This man wants to kill your whole family."
"That's not funny," the woman said crossly.
"It sure as hell ain't. Now get!"
Lurleen kicked the side of the van with her heavy foot. A loud thud that started the race and sent the van charging up the road. She turned to the gentleman and cocked her jaw.
"I don't mind walking long as we need to. You won't catch any rides,
until I get my answer. He took one big, long step up to the plate and put his face close to hers. He looked into her eyes, and she looked right the fuck back. "I like you, Lurline," he said. "Of course you do. I'm damn likable. But I'll never answer your question. It's not for you to know." In the distance came a high, sharp whistle and the rumble of metal on metal. A train. "Any old port in a storm, huh?" he said, and left the road, walking briskly into the open field, heading for the tracks. Without a second thought, she followed, because there was still one more question she needed to ask.
In my dreams, I laugh and smoke. Everybody screams, tell them jokes. I like to gamble, sure don't ever lose. Got a closet full of pinstripes, three-piece suits. I pull laces, you pull twos.
When I wake up, I don't know what to do.
I battle demons dead of the night. I don't come home, the sun shines bright. I walk with you, but are you walking with me? You can tell everybody's on the same street. I pull laces, you pull.
The train had to slow down for a gentle shift in direction around the bend. And that's where the gentleman hopped into an open boxcar. Lurline was right behind him, hobbled slightly by the heavy ruck over her shoulder. Once she tossed that into the car, it wasn't hard to get a running start and climb aboard just before the train picked up speed at the straightaway. She lay flat on her back, looking up at the gentleman who extended a hand. "No thanks. I need to lay here for a spell." In both ends of the train car, there were huddled shadows and sleeping figures. They started to chatter, rising, alarmed. They stared at the gentleman as if they knew who he was. One of them, an older man, wearing a thin coat but shiny new shoes, left the pack and approached. He took off his beanie and stuck it under his arm next to the short stick bindle. "Are you who I think you are?" the hobo asked politely.
"Reckon so."
"You a traveling man?"
"Yes, sir.
Name of Winston Salem. It was an honor to make your acquaintance. And now, with no ill manners or disrespect intended, I have to say, this is my stop." They hadn't stopped. They hadn't even slowed down. And they were tits high in a cornfield, barreling along full tilt boogie. But old Winston Salem just took a step over the edge, and he was gone. The others seemed to share Winston's concern, but not his conviction, because no one else disembarked. He said to her, "All traveling men are hobos, but not all hobos are traveling men." Lurline had no idea what he meant. She sat up and let her legs dangle over the edge. The gentleman joined her and did the same. They rode in silence, watching the bumpy landscape rise and fall under the constant of the low-hung moon. And maybe she could see why a body might want to travel forever. Lurline was never happier than when she was moving, when she was driving, even though there were very rarely such picturesque tableaus like the one before her now. Her body sagged. She was tired.
She leaned against the doorway and lazily plucked the knife from her boot. "I'm starting to fade," she explained to him. "It's been too long since I got any real shut-eye. Why don't you watch my back for an hour, and then I'll watch yours so you can sleep." He shook his head. "How could I sleep when there are so many roads to explore, so many little avenues and lanes that I've yet to travel?" "Fine then, have it your way. So I'm telling you, and I'm telling everyone else here, you listening boys, that I'm sleeping with this knife in my hand. Any of you some bitches touch me, you'll pull back a stump." The gentleman got to his feet. "I will admit to various indiscretions and shortcomings of character, but in some ways I have been and will always be a gentleman. I will not lay a hand on you as you rest. On this, you have my word." Lurline was already nodding off when he grabbed the metal ladder on the side of the boxcar and climbed up to the roof. It was a light sleep, and her dreams were thin and watery, but still ugly. She saw a swarm of severed hands cresting like a wave over her head. "Give me one, or I'll take both," the demon hissed into her ear. "Kick rocks, Slim," she snarled, totally unfazed. "This skinny, armless motherfucker again? Criminy, give it up, man." And then she was roused. She was waking as the wheels of the train started to squeal. The brakes were clamping down. Not the natural, gradual stop that a train needed, but a hard one. This was not good. She got upright and leaned out the door, taking a gander at the engine. She saw it burning brightly. A dead man, no doubt the conductor, was draped over the railing as the southern gentleman stood on the roof, howling something at the moon that she couldn't quite make out. Then the boxcars started colliding, bucking and jumping off the rails. Lurline tossed her ruck through the door and tried not to think about it as she jumped after it. The ground rose to meet her like an old friend, but instead of hugging her, it kicked the shit out of her. She tried to roll with the landing, but having never jumped out of a moving train before, she wasn't any good at it. The breath left her lungs, and she did her best to keep her arms, legs, and head tucked in so that she didn't break anything. Even when she rolled to a stop, she couldn't stop. Behind her, the train cars were colliding. Big bangs and grinding steel, enormous thuds as these massive things flew in all directions like a house of blocks knocked over by an angry toddler. She crawled away from it, sucking in breath as best she could, moving on all fours through the corn and the weeds. When the noises stopped, she stopped. Lurline collapsed into a heap, hugging herself, trying to regain her composure. She needed to get a grip, and she needed to find her ruck. She just hoped that it wasn't buried under wreckage. But that could wait. The sun would be up soon, and that would give her light to find it. Before then, she had to settle something. She walked back towards the tracks, towards where the front of the train should have landed. Before she saw the southern gentleman, she could smell the crusty smoke of his old hand-rolled cigarette. He saw her coming, but he wasn't expecting the punch. Lurleen caught him flush on the jaw and sent him back a couple of steps. "I wouldn't push it, little miss. Don't suppose it really matters what you are, does it, old-timer?" she responded. "Man or myth, what difference is it? You do it for fun, you're trying to die. What difference is it? We do what we do. We are what we are. The whole Guldorn reason I called you out was to give you an opportunity. You want to die? You want the ultimate thrill? I can give you both." "What are you talking about?" "Earl Joe Hendershot is back. I'm asking for your help. One road warrior to another. Come to Crooked Neck. Take a ride in the kill car. Either you end Earl Joe, or he ends you. Either way, we both win." Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. Find the show on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Reddit. You can contact us directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com, or you can go to Patreon to get all the latest updates on the show, bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes analysis videos. You can also find Lurleen's previous escapade. She spent the last 4 Patreon exclusives in Pierre Narota. You guys also got a chance to meet Swingin' Sonny Champagne this time. He's one of the show's most dazzling creations and a feature player in some 8, 9, maybe even 10 episodes that you've never heard before. Find out what you're missing. Join Scary Home patrons Catherine, Carl, Eric, Andy, Pat, Rachav, Brett, Aaron, Jess, Susan, David, Kelly, Caleb, Angela, Roki, Melissa, Brennan, Sydney, Imani, Mark, Kevin, Matt, Buck, Ashley, and Monica. And if I didn't include your name, and I should have, send me a strongly worded email, and I'll make it right. Music this episode: Horror by Jesse James Little, Lonesome Valley by Black Twig Pickers, El Diablo by Cletus Got Shot, Aces and Twos by Devil Makes Three, Southern Born by Waylon Thompson, and the theme music was from Beat Mechanic. You can find all of this great music at freemusicarchive.com.